Also come to order, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, Excused, Boone, Esquivel, Greenlick.
Flag salute will be led by Representative John Lim.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony today will be presented by Pastor Mary Smith of the Powerhouse Temple in Portland, a guest of Representative Chip Shields.
Father, today we praise you and we thank you for our gathering. We ask today that you would bless each and every one that's under the sound of my voice. that you would lift the burdens, that you would give them what to say and how to say. You said in your word that we should pray for governors and rulers and those that are in authority. We come today to invoke these blessings upon these men and women who legislate laws that we are to live by. We ask today that you would word their hearts, that you would give them what to say, when to say, and how to say. That you would bless their going out and their coming in, their down sitting and their uprising. Help them to realize that other lives are dependent upon the laws that they legislate. Help them to do the things that are right that we might be able to live thereby and abide therein. That we might forever give you the glory, the honor, and the praise for these men and women that stand to legislate laws that we are to live by. In Jesus' name, amen.
Courtesies. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm going to shortly be giving a concurrent resolution on Robert Thornton, but I wanted to introduce to you the Thornton family who is over here on the side aisle. Tom Thornton and his wife, Melissa, are in the middle, his sons, Tabor and Tim, and Robert Thornton's niece, Kathy Farr, and her husband, Ivan. Please welcome them today to the chamber.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to ask you all to join me in extending courtesies and a warm welcome to the Oregon Bankers Association. If you have any questions about your financing or how they're taking care of your money, they're in the building today, and go look them up. Thank you very much.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please extend courtesies to my constituent, Sue Bricky. Please stand, Sue. She is sitting on the side aisle. Miss Bricky is the kind of constituents that we all love because she keeps in regular touch with me. She is terrific about keeping me informed about the issues about which she is concerned. Today, Ms. Bricky is visiting the Capitol to talk about something we're all very interested in, which is higher education funding. This isn't Sue's very first visit to the Capitol. She was an intern with the Oregon Public Health Association in the 70s when she was a Portland State University student, and I was also a student in the 70s. She remembers that the big issue of the day then was motorcycle helmets. Sue is proud PSU alum and has served as the president of its alumni association. Sue's internship paid off. She has an impressive work history as a healthcare administrator, including serving as a vice president for LifeWise. Sue is true to her university and its values because she is also an active volunteer, including serving on the board of the Oregon Business Association, a member of the Kiwanis, and the Friends of Simon Benson. Please join me in welcoming Sue Bricky to the Oregon House of Representatives.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please join me in welcoming Lou Taglier to our chamber. Please stand up. Thank you. Lou and his family own and operate a Grants Pass landmark, the old Champion Outlet Store. I remember it just as the Champion Outlet Store. On your desk today, you'll find a little write-up about Lou and his business. He's here today with some of his partners from Rogue Community College because he's concerned about funding for our colleges. A recent economic development survey indicated Rogue Valley businesses need and want the community college to play a bigger role in developing programs that offer a wide variety of skills and training to prepare an effective workforce and meet our current and projected needs. Please extend the courtesies of this chamber to Lou and his friends from Rogue Community College who are with us today in the gallery. Thank you.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to direct your attention to the side aisle where a friend of mine, Mary Catterley, is here today. Many of you know Mary Catterley because she's a talent of our state. She's an actress, songwriter. She teaches voice, which I would recommend to a number of my colleagues. And she's most known as a fantastic musical performer with over six CDs to her name. Mary and I are in the same agency in Portland. One of the differences between Mary and myself is that she actually has talent. I think you've probably all enjoyed her music, and I hope you will extend to her every courtesy and welcome. Mary?
Further courtesies. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President informing you the Senate has passed in Bill 156, 169, 264, 265, 290, 298, 408, 409, 412, 413, 479, 556, 804, 879, 950, House Bill 2321, passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate, House Bill 2121 and 2191.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. Clerk will read the resolution.
HCR 10, in memoriam Robert Y. Thornton, 1910 to 2003.
Question now arises on final reading and adoption of House Concurrent Resolution 10. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, listen up. I'm talking to you. HCR 10 honors Robert Y. Thornton, and we in this chamber tend to get somewhat self-important as legislators in terms of our service to the state, and I would like to present to you a brief summation of the life and contributions of Robert Y. Thornton so you can understand just how high this bar is actually set. Bob Thornton was born in Portland in 1910, and he graduated from Stanford University, where his interest was in music. And then he went to the University of Oregon Law School. In 1941, he joined the Army, and he served 5 years as an officer, an intelligence officer, and he learned the Japanese language. In 1951, he served one term in this body and then was elected to the position of Attorney General of the State of Oregon. He served four terms in that position from 1953 to 1969. I want you to think of the effect this one individual, Bob Thornton, has had on the legal system of the State of Oregon. I won't go through all those things for you. I'm going to keep this brief, but I want to impress upon you how long that was to serve in that position. His family stated that there are three things he was most proud of during these years. They were pioneering of a welfare recovery division, legal opinions protecting Oregon's offshore lands, and three, establishing the state's first crime prevention agencies. These are the things he is proudest of. You can imagine the host of things he was involved in. You may think that's enough, but then he went on to the Oregon Court of Appeals, where he served from 1971 to 1983. At last, he retired from public life, but you can imagine he was not retired from helping Oregon be a better place. He remained active in countless organizations. He continued to advocate for crime prevention legislation and putting prisoners to work, as well as writing a book entitled Preventing Crime in America and Japan. Those are his retirement projects. Robert Y. Thornton died in 2003, and this, my friends, is a life of service very, very well served. I'm going to give you just a brief sense of this man. And let me borrow the words from Tom Thornton, who I introduced to you. He is Robert Y. Thornton's only child, and he may look familiar to those of you who've spent some time in this building, because Tom is retired as an Oregon State Trooper. And last session, he was one of those guys, you know, talking into his wrist and keeping track of us in committee rooms and sort of in the background of our lives. Here are Tom's words about his father, and I think he would tell you this is what he remembers so clearly. quote, "He was probably the most law-abiding person I have ever known. While growing up, it was sometimes frustrated. If the speed limit said 55 miles an hour, he went 55 miles an hour. And if the walk sign said wait, we waited." In closing, let me just give you two more quotes which describe this giant of a man who is part of what Tom Brokaw so aptly described as the greatest generation. Quote, "Robert Y. Thornton will be remembered for his love of humanity, Japan, golf, and playing the piano." And, quote, "He was a gentleman in the true sense of the word and a man of great integrity." My friends, this is a very high standard indeed. I think we can all aspire to have these kinds of things said about us at the close of our careers. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are in support of the resolution, please vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Lim votes aye. House Concurrent Resolution 10, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. It is a delight to have all of you here, and our state is so much the better for the service provided by your father. Propositions and motions. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I return to courtesies briefly, please?
Representative Schaffler asks for unanimous consent to return to courtesies without objection. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I asked us all to extend courtesy to the Bankers Association. They weren't in the chambers at the time, but they are now. So say hi to the people who take care of our money, please. Thank you very much.
Further courtesies. Back to propositions and motions. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2405 and repass the bill.
Representative Schaffler moves the House concur in Senate amendments to House Bill 2405 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you remember, House Bill 2405 was the fee structure put together to create an e-permitting process here in the state of Oregon. It's a great bill, passed easily. The Senate, in all their wisdom, have put a sunset of 2018 on. I agree with that, and I ask you all to concur as well. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2405 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. Representative Crummell votes aye. House Bill 2405A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2032, relating to tax deferred property. House Bill 2138, relating to pretrial release. House Bill 2702, relating to written documents produced by agents of state government, declaring an emergency. House Bill 2761, relating to elections. House Bill 2906, relating to discrimination in education, declaring an emergency. House Bill 3068, relating to vector control and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3530, relating to short-term borrowing and declaring an emergency.
Bills read a second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill in short summary.
House Bill 2792 relating to water utilities provides that water utility mail notice of a delinquency in water bill to property owners only if utility asserts that property owners are responsible for bill.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2792. Those are the opinion the bill should pass. The vote aye. Those opposed no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cowan votes aye. Representative Holvey votes aye. Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Representative Boquist. Representative Boquist is off the floor. House Bill 2792, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution.
H.J.R. 14, proposing amendment to Oregon Constitution relating to elections.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Joint Resolution 14A. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. H.J.R. 14A comes to us with bipartisan support from the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. This is related to reforming the double majority election requirement. The core principle really here is that a majority of voters should have the right to decide election outcomes. Kind of a novel idea in a democracy, but that's where we're not today. Today, non-voters can trump the will of voters merely by sitting at home. Since 1996, dozens of school districts, fire districts, park districts, library districts, community colleges, veteran service boards, and others across Oregon have lost measures because non-voters have sat at home, trumping the will of those who voted yes or no on measures. The current double majority election requirement really faces an undue burden on these local governments and on voters, by requiring them not only to persuade a majority of voters to vote yes, but also persuading a majority of voters to turn out. If you look back to 2004, both presidential campaigns did an amazing job of registering voters, and that's a great thing. The problem is they bloated the election rolls. And so when all these local measures for roads and schools and veterans and other things came out in 2005 and 2006, the voting rolls were so bloated that it was impossible to get a 50% turnout of voters. And so even though voters passed measure after measure by 55, 60, 65, 70, 75, 80% yes votes, these measures nevertheless went down. HGR 14 will change all that and restore the core principle that when a majority of voters approve something, that measure will pass. There was a problem back before 1996. There were some local governments who would do these sneak attack elections where they would propose a measure out in an obscure date at an obscure time when voters wouldn't be aware of it to try and pass measures. That was before the implementation of vote by mail. That was back when local governments could do that 8 elections a year instead of the current 4, or what under this bill would be proposed as just twice a year. That was back before there were any kind of property tax limits under Measure 5. There was a problem before 1996, but the advent of vote by mail, where every voter gets not only a ballot mailed to their house, but 3 weeks to be able to vote, has changed that. The advent of the property tax limits on Measure 5 have changed that. The change that has occurred, some by previous legislatures by reducing the number of elections, and under this bill by reducing the opportunities even further to just May and November to send out these local measures to qualify for a majority wins election, have changed that. And so because of all those changes, Representative Burley and I, as well as Senator Morse and Senator Devlin, and as you'll see on the bill, a bipartisan group
have brought this resolution forward to again restore that core principle back to voters. Majority wins. The majority should win. And if a majority votes no, that majority should carry as well. Under this resolution, as it would be referred to the voters, any other, if a local government tried to bring out a measure during a September election or any other time besides November and May, the double majority would still apply. So this does not eliminate the double majority requirement. It reforms it in a way that gives twice a year opportunities for local districts to put out measures and for a majority of voters to vote yes or vote no. And frankly, we very intentionally pursued this moderate middle ground approach rather than a full repeal, because we think this is a middle ground that makes sense while still preserving and validating the original value of the double majority requirement while recognizing the realities today. One of the things we heard about in committee was the endless number of local governments that have lost measures because of this requirement. And you may think it applies just to schools, and it is a huge issue for schools, and it's really the first of several bills we'll consider this session that will make a key difference toward helping K-12 schools develop plans for advancing capital construction projects. It will help schools, but it also is going to help community colleges. There are measures benefiting veterans in Tillamook County and police in West Lynn and roads in Lapine, and the list goes on and on and on of measures that have lost, not because voters said no, but because non-voters stayed home and chose to veto the will of voters. We heard about all these examples in committee. As these local governments struggle under the county timber funding being reduced and other financial realities, this gives them one tool in their toolbox to be able to go to voters. It doesn't guarantee those voters are going to say yes. It just gives them a toolbox that if the voters do say yes, that measure will actually carry. A great example from just last month. In West Lynn, a police safety levy to pay for 12 police officers failed. Now, you might think it failed because a majority of voters in West Lynn said, no, we don't want those 12 police officers. But actually, 72% of voters in West Lynn said, yes, we do want those 12 police officers. And yet the will of those 72% was vetoed because only 45% of registered voters turn out. And that intentionally happened in West Lynn because some people who opposed the measure said, rather than arguing on the merits, this is a bad measure, we don't need these police, you should vote no. Rather than doing that, they decided, we're going to stay home. Let's do an organized campaign through neighborhoods to tell people not to vote as a way to defeat the measure. Colleagues, that is an anti-small-d democratic principle. And I think all of us believe in the core principle of democracy, that the rights of voters should be heard. A majority of voters, their will should carry the day. So HJR 14 is one clear action that we can take today, that we can take this session, to send a clear signal to our schools, to our police, to our firefighters, to those who care about roads and veterans and parks and libraries, that we are effectively doing our job and giving them a chance to effectively do their job to restore that core principle that when a majority of voters approve something, their will should carry.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, I rise today to urge your support of this very important resolution modifying the double majority requirement. I have some personal experience and frustrations with this issue. For more than 13 years, I've been an involved parent with the Beaverton School District, which is the fastest growing school district in the state. And with 1,000 people a month moving into Washington County, we are constantly faced with the need for new schools. On several occasions, I've worked on bond measures and local option levies. And in 2000, I was very involved with the school district's $149 million capital bond measure in May of that year. We can all think of better ways for a school district to spend time and money, but frankly, with no other way to pay for capital construction, which I hope will change this session, and with the schools overflowing, the need was compelling. The bond measure received 61% of the vote, but did not pass because there was a 47% turnout. The school district put the measure back on the ballot in November, incurred additional costs to do that, and it passed with a 65% vote. And a similar scenario just happened last year. Now, I remember in the late 90s when the double majority was on the ballot, and as the good representative from Clackamas County discussed, the rationale was in part that we didn't want tax measures sneaking on the ballot. Now, colleagues, there's not a chance that that's been happening. In fact, during the Beaverton School District campaigns, they've organized groups of students and teachers and parents to stand out on the street corner waving signs, massive campaigns of letters to the editors. These measures do not come as a surprise, and if voters do not agree with the merits, they can vote no. Many people across my district have expressed concern with what they perceive as a fundamental unfairness with the double majority. I agree, and I urge your aye vote to adopt House Joint Resolution 14. Thank you.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
I support House Joint Resolution 14 as well, and I appreciate my colleague's comments from Washington County. She and I both represent parts of the Beaverton School District, which you've already heard is the fastest growing in the state. And I wanted to briefly share with you the experience of last year. In May, the district put on a bond for $195 million to address serious overcrowding. If it had passed, it would have built two new elementary schools, two new option high schools, and add classrooms to the most overcrowded high schools in the district, had large support in the community, and passed with a 60-40 margin. But because of the double majority requirement, it failed when only 37% of voters turned out. Because of that extreme need, the district put the bond measure back on the ballot in November, where it received nearly the exact same percentage of votes, and because of 70% turnout, it passed. You might be tempted to think that that's a good outcome, and the fact that the bond passed certainly is, but the delay is a problem for two important reasons. By waiting those several months, the same $195 million will buy significantly less as a result of rising construction costs, and what's more, that delay for students who won't get those smaller classes is time they'll never get back. I appreciate the comments of the Majority Leader, and I hope that you will help us give voters the chance to enact a sensible solution to this problem. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I heard some comments.
To the resolution.
I apologize. To the resolution. Heard some comments from the good representative from Clackamas County that I agree with, and my name is on this bill. I heard some comments that I do disagree with as to why people may not be participating in these elections. I think a lot of it does rest squarely on the fact that we did not have clean voter rolls, and that is not the responsibility of the voter. That's the responsibility of the counties and the state and the Secretary of State's office. However, I do support this bill because I think of it in the terms of if we were in a meeting and someone made a motion, and if that motion was not seconded, it would die. If it is seconded, it would be open for discussion. I can second that motion, and I might not agree with it, but at least I think it's worthy of having further discussion. And that's kind of how I approach this bill, letting the voters decide yet again, by virtue of an election, if they want to modify this double majority rule. There are new circumstances that face us today. There's no doubt about it. And sometimes, I think in the past, people not showing up to vote are, in fact, voting by saying no. And that puts the responsibility on proponents to make a very strong case. I think that is the responsibility in any election. However, and once again, I think that the voters of this state, because there are new dynamics, because we have to continue to face the criticism or cure it, voters should have the opportunity to express their will on this issue. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hunt, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I would. I appreciate the comments of the good representative from Clackamas, Damascus, Boring, and Estacada. And she and I share the North Clackamas School District, which was actually the very first victim of the double majority election requirement back in early 1997. And unfortunately, back then, I think those of us in northern Clackamas County saw the results very early. I think it's taken about 10 years to really begin to feel the effects of that measure as it is systematically across our state struck in district after district, in city after city, in county after county. We have the opportunity to do a great thing, to give voters an opportunity to reform the double majority election requirement, to do something great for schools, great for community colleges, great for police, for fire, for veterans, for parks, for libraries, all in one vote. I urge your iVote. Let's send this to the voters and give them a chance to reform the double majority.
Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes no. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. House Joint Resolution 14A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 156 relating to State Drinking Water Advisory Committee. Senate Bill 169 relating to investigations. Senate Bill 264 relating to reporting abuse of persons with developmental disabilities. Senate Bill 265 relating to reporting to Department of Human Services regarding psychiatric treatment methods. Senate Bill 292 relating to corporate reporting. Senate Bill 298 relating to permanent revocation of driving privilege for driving while under the influence of intoxicants. Senate Bill 408 relating to termination of parental rights. Senate Bill 409 relating to placement of children. Senate Bill 412 relating to reports of child abuse. Senate Bill 413 relating to Department of Human Services report on voucher care placement. Senate Bill 479 relating to school lighting and declare an emergency. Senate Bill 556 relating to occupational safety violation procedures. Senate Bill 804 relating to wildlife laws. Senate Bill 879 relating to pay management programs. Senate Bill 950 relating to public records.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Representative Krummel, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request to go back to courtesies.
Representative Krummel asks for unanimous consent to return to courtesies without objection. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I would like to introduce on the side aisle a constituent of mine from the Bull Mountain area. This is Julie Russell.
Say colleagues, can you please give Representative Krummel your full attention?
Julie has been involved in annexation issues. She has also been she was heavily involved with the move to try to create the city of Bull Mountain in last year's election. And I just appreciate all the work that she does on the behalf of folks in my district and wanted to recognize her. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies? Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nathanson.
Permission to return to courtesies.
Representative Nathanson asks unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Without objection, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to extend courtesies to the students joining us today from Gillam Elementary in Eugene and their teacher, Peggy Lilliengren. They're in the gallery. Please welcome them. Thank you.
Return to announcements. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, we are going to caucus immediately after floor session, and so please come to the caucus room.
Representative Hunt.
Democrats will actually grab lunch and then caucus at 11:30. So please grab your lunch, 11:30.
Further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd just briefly like to call your attention to the Capitol clips today. Buried back in there is an article about the rural school, the Secure Rural Schools Community Self-Determination Act, and whether the double majority is one of the tools that we provide to the counties, we are yet to see. But I would just quote that the headline say, funds may be renewed in the short term, but Oregon congressional delegation says the end is likely. And in the remaining days of this legislature, I'd just like to remind members we need to provide whatever tools are necessary to the counties and local government so they can respond to this loss of future funding. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today in my district and indeed around the state is a legislative education day that primarily is a day that is bringing people of color and African Americans down to get an understanding of the work that we do here, a greater understanding, and to engage in the political process. People in my district are calling it an event to honor matrons of motivation and patrons of progress. And in part, it was chosen today because they're commemorating today, 54 years ago, the passage of public accommodation law in this state. And I wanted to give recognition from this body to Senator Hatfield, the last living person who helped make that happen. And also today, over in the Senate, they're hearing some resolutions to mark that day and memorials to mark that day and to also honor people like Carl Flipper from my district, as well as Willie Mae Hart, a civil rights matriarch from my district who just celebrated her 91st birthday. And I think it's also important to recognize Representative Minnis on this important day for calling attention to this great achievement in our history by last session putting a picture that commemorated that so prominently. So, colleagues, please extend your appreciation to Representative Minnis for that. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:30 a.m., Monday, April 9th, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m., Monday, April 9th, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m., Monday, April 9th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.